If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Tuesday, and I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold. And remember, you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. As I said, it's Tuesday, coming off an interesting weekend. I've never seen Florida State recruiting move so fast up the board. It was like a live sporting event. I follow this stuff pretty closely because of my ties to Clemson. But FSU was, and I'm on Twitter, so you see this, and they had four or five recruits over the weekend. Did you hear about this, Bobby?
I absolutely did, Steve. It was pretty crazy. Quick story for you, and I'll let you do the show.
No, go ahead.
A buddy of mine, his name is Ryan. He's here from UNC, and he runs track for UNC. So he came to Florida State, and he'd never been there before. So we're walking around campus, and we get to the front of the stadium, and I'm looking at my cell phone. So it's just us three, and no one else is on the road. All I hear is, how you guys doing? And then both my friends look up like, oh, we're good. I'm like, oh, some dude's going to sell us a petition. I look up from my phone. It's Urban Meyer. I mean, not Urban Meyer. It's Coach Mike Norvell. Yeah. He's just standing alone in the front, smiling at the front of the stadium.
When was this?
This was Sunday. It was Sunday. Either Sunday or Saturday, whenever all those recruits are coming in.
Yeah.
He's standing by himself right in front of the stadium, just smiling, like, look at my work. We're doing good, boys.
Well, this obviously is really good news, and I think they're ranked in the recruiting's the top five at this point. So the question is going to be consistency, if they can stay there, and then clearly got to have some wins this season. So anyways, fun to watch. It'll be fun to watch, traverse back from the valley up to the top of the mountain. So I think they're obviously making some moves this year. We'll see how it turns out on the playing field. You know, also one more other really quick sporting event. The World Cup's going on right now, and the France Switzerland game was crazy. And I know you probably haven't heard about it, but I was watching they were down. Switzerland was down 3-1 with 10 minutes to go, which is like two or three touchdowns in football.
Yeah,
right?
I played soccer, so yeah. I'm with you.
So they ended up tying it and won in penalty kick, Switzerland. So anyway, very, very exciting. All right, off the sporting path, now more to more mundane things here locally, although we'll make them exciting. Look, we've got a school board meeting tonight, and so we've got some stuff we want to talk to you about. Interesting things, a lot of money. We'll talk about an item that they're spending a couple million dollars on, school safety related. Also, you know, one of the things we find out through these school board meetings is some of the developments that are coming to town, exactly how big they're going to be, because they have to file what they call a school impact analysis with the school board. It's usually pretty perfunctory in the sense that it's just on the consent agenda, but it does provide some details that you don't get sometimes in other places. So we've got a couple of those projects that we'll share with you that's on the school board agenda tonight. We've got a proposal for Roseanne Wood with regards to how she wants to approach the mask situation in the coming year. You're really going to want to hear this. She's someone that has been very adamant, an advocate for not letting go of some of the regulations or the restraints in terms of what people can do if they're not vaccinated. So there's a policy that she released that she wants to be considered. Now, I'm not sure if it's going to be considered tonight at the agenda, but it was at the, quote, pre-agenda, the agenda workshop, and we have it, and we'll go through the six items, and I'll tell you, again, you're going to want to hear this. It really addresses grouping people up by if they're vaccinated or not, I think, in one area for kids under 12. So we'll talk about that. And there's going to be a move to go ahead and get rid of the virtual board meeting ordinance. The Governor DeSantis signed a while ago. Not a lot of significance here other than a fact it's another step that the impact of the COVID pandemic is in its waning days. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about some state news. Look, the big state story is obviously the condominium that tragically collapsed last week. That's in the news. DeSantis, you know, they say that from a politician standpoint, how you handle a crisis really reflects on from the voters, because the voters are always looking to see, you know, what their leaders are doing. And, you know, it is a time for them to really take over the news and to see people get to know their personality. And so for all practical purposes, it looks like DeSantis in the state of Florida is doing a pretty good job in responding to this. Now, in terms of the causes and stuff, you know, this is something that's going to be addressed. It's, you know, hey, this, I know I'm not good at measuring time, but it wasn't long ago that a bridge in South Florida over a highway, a walking bridge, collapsed and killed a number of people. So, you know, we're going to spend a little time talking about sort of the idea here of regulations and it and why, you know, why this might be happening. I know there are all these theories out there, but so anyway, that's obviously the top of the news. At the same time, Governor DeSantis is having to deal with a lot of bills that are coming his way in terms of from the session. And so and some of the bills he's already signed are making news. For example, this social media law is it's was passed and signed and now is already in front of a judge. Judge Hinkle here in Tallahassee, a federal judge. We'll go over a little bit of what he's saying so far. He did not issue an injunction as requested, but is said that he will have some kind of decision by Thursday. And we've got some quotes from him on what his views were. And also, one of these things that these cases do is they've got the you've got both sides represented, so you sort of you hear the arguments from both sides. Instead of the political spin, you hear the legal arguments. When you're passing a bill, you hear two politicians put on the political spin. When you're in front of a judge, you've got to make the legal arguments, which sometimes can be a little bit more instructive on exactly is what is happening with that bill. Another bill that is or another issue from the statewide news that we want to talk about is this new betting amendment. There's a political committee that was started by DraftKings and FanDuel. And if you don't know who they are, they're two of the largest sports betting, I guess, online corporations. They actually tried to merge a couple of years ago, and they were not allowed to due to antitrust issues. So now they've got together, and they have put together a political committee, and they're trying to get an amendment on the ballot that would allow them to really expand their business here in Florida. But the other side of that is it's going to really put a wrench in this whole gambling compact that was passed by the Florida legislature, negotiated by Governor Ron DeSantis, but signed by the legislature. And I think if you look at the what's going on here, this is the simple, goes back to the old argument on why do people rob banks? Is because that's where they keep the money. Well, why are people trying to get into gambling? Is because there is so much money being spent on gambling. I was talking to a friend that, you know, over the last year when sports were down, gamblers didn't have anything to gamble on, so they started gambling on these penny stocks or these, you know, the Bitcoin. And so, look, some people say it's addiction. Others say it's, you know, look, adult fun. But Florida is becoming sort of the focus here because of this gambling compact that was signed. And now you've got these two gambling, these online betting companies that are went together to start this committee, and they're going to try to get this on the ballot. This is going to be tricky because the language is going to have to be precise, and it's easy for, you know, one of the things that's got to happen is you not only got to get the signatures, you got to get the sign-off on by the Supreme Court. So anyway, we'll talk about some of that state stuff in our last segment. When we get back, we will turn our attention to the school board meeting and a couple items there that will be impacting you here locally. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home. but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Give them a call at 385-6649, 385-6649. And we appreciate the sponsorship of Epps Decorating Center. I didn't mention the opening, so our next segment, we're going to go over a little bit of this trial coming up, the FBI trial here over local corruption. Just going to run through three or four things that could come out of this trial or come out of a resolution, be it a trial or a some kind of a settlement. So we'll do that in the next segment. But I want to turn our attention now to the school board. As you know, if you're a regular listener, you know we've been really focusing on the school board and schools in general. We're going to continue to do that over the next foreseeable future because of the impact of schools on people. I mean, there's 33,000 students in our school system, and you're talking about parents, teachers. So we think it's really something that needs to be covered more than it has been in the past. So we try to and we understand what we're finding out now, that there's a couple of different areas to cover. One, obviously, is the school board meetings where they are setting sort of very broad policies. But the other part is you got to start digging into the schools because they have so much autonomy, and you'll start seeing some of the coverage related to that too. All right, so the school board meeting will take place tonight, and has been the practice since Superintendent Hannah was elected, is they have a workshop meeting on Monday, which is really tough to cover. It's not broadcast. You got to actually go there physically, and we haven't been able to do that. A number of people haven't been able to do that. So you have to look at some of the things that are on the agenda. And they discuss some of the stuff that comes up on Tuesday. But one of the things I wanted to take a minute and go over here, and this is Roseanne Wood's proposal for COVID policies for the upcoming school year. Now, we've talked about Ms. Wood's position here with regards to the mask. I mean, she's been been an advocate of being very stringent on some of the rules in terms of wearing masks, getting vaccinated. And I know that Superintendent Hannah's had to push back on some of her proposals, but she's typed up this proposal. It was included as one of the agenda items at the workshop, and I wanted to go through it because I think it sort of gives you it'll give you a perspective of where people are coming from and what the school board is going to have to deal with here coming up. Because, you know, Superintendent Hannah has announced that masks will be voluntary in the fall, and, you know, there'll be no digital academy. I think we all know that, in the sense that if you're going to not go to school, you're going to have to go through Florida Virtual School instead of the way they had it set up this previous year. But so she lists six items, and she prefaces the six items, you know, is by noting that 50% of the population in Leon County has gotten vaccinated, and it says, while our community transmission rate is low, the new variants are very contagious among unvaccinated people. Currently, we have not provided policies or an education campaign to encourage LCS employees and other school community to get vaccinated. You know, I don't know about the campaign. I mean, I know we see a lot of campaigns about getting vaccinated. I don't know if there's any specific policy that the school board could adopt. But so this is the preference paragraph to these six items, which I'll read, is it's the school board's responsibility to weigh in on policies for the upcoming school year. There are many pros and cons for children wearing masks all day at school. Under an optional mask policy, parents, not children, should decide if their child should wear a mask. If we are going to continue with a, quote, mask optional policy for the school year, I propose a policy that differentiates between adults, young children, and older students. And then her six items follow. And so I'll read those. It says, to protect our vulnerable children and employees, we strongly encourage all eligible employees, students, and families of school-aged children to get vaccinated. So that's basically, we even have an ad running on our website, Tallahassee Reports, encouraging people to get vaccinated. Number two, we strongly encourage all vaccinated LCS employees and any adult who enters the Leon County School Board property to disclose their vaccination status to the building administrator. Now, you know, again, this is, you got to carry around your papers that you're vaccinated. Not sure how that's going to fly, but that's a policy recommendation supported by Ms. Wood. Number three, all LCS employees and adults who are vaccinated are not expected to wear a mask. Unvaccinated LC employees and adults on LCS property are expected to wear a mask indoors. Number four, parents with children under age 12 will designate whether their child should wear a mask inside classrooms. School employees will undertake reasonable efforts to reinforce the parent's designation. So this is just an enforcement nightmare. So you're going to ask teachers now to have a roll, have a roll call of which students are supposed to be wearing masks, and they're going to have to help out in implementing the parents' wishes. Number five, school administrators will group children under 12 who are required by their parents to wear a mask when feasible and appropriate. Again, a logistical nightmare. So you're going to group kids based on mask and non-mask. All right, and number six, for students 12 and over, mask wearing will be directed by the parent with no expectation of enforcement by LCS employees. So three of these proposals deal with the other under age 12, basically saying that she wants school officials to help enforce parents' wishes of kids to wear masks voluntarily, to the point of where you're grouping masks, kids that are being asked to wear masks together. So anyway, we're going to be on the lookout to see if this policy is going to be addressed at the school board meeting tonight. This was something that was proposed at the pre-agenda workshop, so we'll keep an eye on that. All right, a couple other items I want to get into real quick. We published a story about the school board hiring a company to help with the school safety issues that have come up with the requirements that were passed a couple of years ago due to the tragedy in South Florida. And we didn't have a number figure for that. And what we're figuring out now is that there's a couple different components to the school safety plan for the school board. First of all, they're going to have the school resource officers that will be applied or which will be supplied by the Leon County Sheriff's Department. That's going to be voted on tonight. I think that is going to be another, looks like another $2 million or $2.5 million or $2 million for that program. Now, the other part of the program was an independent or was a private sector company that I think is going to provide some other resources where they're needed. And that number on that is about $950,000. And that's the private company which was hired, the Integrity Group. That's $950,000. And this is Security Detail Enhancement Program Services Agreement. Now, the Resource Deputy Program, is $1.5 million. So together, it's going to be about $2.5 million, which will be part of the safety program, which is which was, again, outlined by a state law, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Act. That was signed into law in March of 2018, which requires local school districts to provide school resource officers, school safety officers, and Florida certified guardians in every school bell to bell. So they're going to be voting on it. So that's a financial impact. This is state. These are going to be state dollars, I would assume, most of it. But again, about $2.5 million, and we'll see if the debate on that tonight generates any discussion about these. These officers are obviously going to be, they're going to be armed. I'm not sure if the ones in the elementary school will be. We'll have a story up on that. And we're running out of time in this segment. So what we'll do is when we get back, we're going to talk about the school impact analysis forms. And I want to do that for a couple reasons. First, as I said before, we get some more information on some developments and where they're going around town. And so here we have two that we'll talk about and their impact on the school system. And it tells you how big these developments are going to be, where they're going to be. And so there's two of them that are submitted on the school board agenda tonight that we're going to talk about. And also in the next segment, we'll go over the FBI trial or the federal trial that's going to be going on July 12th on local pay-to-play bribery charges. We'll sort of just set the tee it up of what is being what we're looking at as the possible outcomes. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. And as I was saying before we left, I want to get into two more issues, or school impact analysis form issues, before we get in, turn our attention to the federal trial that's coming up in July. So the school impact analysis forms, which are again buried in the school board meeting agenda, which I find very informative. What they do is, if you're expanding or if you're doing a development, you have to go get the approval of the school board because of the impact on school population. So they have to file maps and numbers with the school board. And so the first one I want to talk about real quick is this, an apartment complex, 210 units, is going to be built off of Bannerman Road near the Cawthorn property, which is the 180-acre development. So they're seeking to get the approval of this. I've never seen one of these turned down, but again, it's right there at Bannerman and Bull Healy Road on the south side. They're building a proposed dwelling of 210 multifamily residential, 210 units. And they will be single family and multifamily. And again, that's right off of Bannerman Road. The schools that are impacted are Hawks Rise, Deer Lake, and Childs. And what they do is they go sort of project how many students, would be generated from this development. And just to give you an example, it looks like they are predicting about 20 students for elementary school coming from this development, about 10 for middle school and 10 for high school. So interesting to see that. And then the other one is out east of town. This is a Arbor Properties project. It's called Arbor Vineyards. Now, as we know, east of town off of Mahan is it's a growing area. The Buck Lake area there is really growing. And this is a development that's going to be at the corner of, let me see if I find the location real quick. The property address will be the southwest corner of Vineland Drive and Mahan Drive. So it's near the I-10 interchange, but that's 198 dwelling units, 34 one-bedroom, 102 two-bedroom, and 62 three-bedroom units. And so they've got about an impact of 40 kids on the elementary school, about 17 on the middle school, which is Swift Creek. The elementary school would be Buck Lake, and the high school would be about 15 at Lincoln. So anyway, again, good information, and I'm not sure, they don't really give the timeline on these projects here in this the school impact analysis form, but you do get other information. So those are two projects. Again, you know, with the rising values of homes and resales, you know, we reported the average cost of a resale home last month, or the 12-month average, was $300,000. So it's getting expensive. More apartments look like they're on the way here, are being built to maybe facilitate some of the people that can't afford to get into the home market right now. So, all right, pivoting from that to the FBI trial, the federal trial involving the investigation that the FBI did with regards to pay to play here in Tallahassee. The text messages that were released inadvertently and were captured by the Tallahassee Democrat has sort of provided some fodder over the last couple of weeks leading up to the trial. And what I wanted to do here just for a few minutes is just sort of reset this. We've had two guilty pleas on this with the City Commissioner Scott Maddox and his associate and Paige Carter Smith. And so from that standpoint, that was the biggest finding or the biggest outcome of the trial. Obviously, COVID has delayed everything, for over a year. But the other indictment that hit was with JT Burnett on JT Burnett, and that's the trial that's coming up. So obviously, the first thing that we're going to get resolved here, either before or during the trial, is sort of we're going to get this resolved if, you know, Burnett is guilty of pay-to-play or bribery charges. The big question is, will there be a trial or will there be a settlement? We won't know that for another couple of days because those things won't happen until right before the trial. A lot of the talk around town is, why that Mr. Burnett has a lot to lose here in terms of going to trial, because you know, if you don't reach a settlement, you know, then it's sort of what comes out of the trial can really impact what kind of sentence you might get. One of the things that was revealed during these text messages, is I think it's the most impactful thing, is it's sort of the revelation that Trulieve, a company that is that Burnett's wife is the CEO of and the major a major stockholder, looks like it could be caught up in this a little bit in terms of some of the pay-to-play issues. Trulieve started in Tallahassee, got their first license here, and when they did, there is a moratorium that was voted on by the city of Tallahassee that benefited Trulieve and a couple other companies. But now it appears that there was some discussions going on between Mr. Burnett and Scott Maddox during this vote. It was a 3-2 vote. So that's going to be the next thing I'll be looking at, is how what that plays or if that comes up again in the trial. Obviously, the third thing that will happen when this is all resolved is you're going to get the sentencing of Mr. Maddox and Paige Carter Smith, who obviously the sentencing is being withheld until after this trial because they are going to be providing some evidence. I guess it would help convict JT Burnett, to put it bluntly. And so, you know, that's never a pleasant thing. And I would assume that if there was a trial, that they would have to testify up to what they know. And so, you know, that's when this trial's over, that's what's going to happen. And we'll get the sort of the outcome of the sentencing for the other two who have pled guilty. Now, you know, the last thing here, which is of big interest, is who else is involved in this? Will there be any other indictments? And, you know, it's, as I said, the COVID pandemic put us, you know, put a sort of a pause on a lot of this. I don't know what the, definitely on the trial, but I wonder if it put a pause on the movement of the investigation. You know, there was a lot of talk about other people being indicted. I mean, it's no secret that, you know, Andrew Gillum and some of his associates were rumored to have be involved with this. And so the question will be, is this something that's going to be resolved or come out during a trial? Now, part of the problem here with going to trial versus a settlement, well, not a problem, but the truth of the matter is if you go to trial, you put people on the stand and you really don't know what they're going to say. And obviously, if you go back and look at the investigation by the FBI, there are a lot of businesses that are involved here in terms of dealing with the city, getting contracts, having to, quote, pay to play. And, you know, the big problem here is trying to delineate between those businesses that were being extorted, basically threatened, you know, you've got to pay to get a permit or, you know, if you're going to do business, versus those who willingly participated in the pay to play scheme and took advantage of it. So that's the line. And so if you're going to have this trial and you're going to have witnesses testifying and you're going to have evidence submitted, stuff that to this point has not really been revealed by the FBI or the feds, that's what's at risk here when you go to trial, is other people are at risk. Now, this could be a basically a strategy by the defense, the JT Burnett defense team, is that, look, if we go to trial, you know, we want to call all these witnesses and talk about exactly how corrupt this city was. And so you really are going to get a lot of the dirty laundry exposed if the judge allows it. Now, obviously, that will be, you know, could be to the point to where every witness is going to have to be decided by if it has something relevant to the specific charges that are being addressed in this trial. But I think, again, there are a lot of people that are probably a little bit nervous about the trial in the sense of their name getting brought up in the testimony or in documents that are submitted by the attorneys. So, you know, the trial's set for July 12th. We're going to have a long 4th of July weekend. And when we get back, you know, it'll be interesting to see if there's any move to settle this. And then we will figure out the next step in this investigation, which seems like it's been going on forever, but you know, there's been a lot of charges about corruption dating back to 2010. This FBI investigation, from what we know, began around 2014, 2015. And so, you know, it's 5 or 6 years, and we're getting ready to get some of the questions answered here soon. So we'll keep you up to date on that and have some more information on exactly what the specific charges are and what kind of evidence we could expect to see, and the fallout from that evidence, and what other people could be involved with it. But all right, well, enough on that. When we get back, we're going to turn our attention to state news. And obviously, the tragedy down south, it's got the a lot of implications for regulation and also the political side of it. And so we'll go through some other things making state news. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3, our Tuesday edition, brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen. The quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they don't mark up the cost of the stone materials. The way they say it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give them a call at 765-2037, 765-2037. We appreciate their sponsorship here, not Above the Fold. All right, state news. You know, before we get to some of the other legislative issues, obviously the story that's leading the coverage all over the state has to do with the tragedy down in South Florida with the collapse of the Florida condominium. And, you know, it's just obviously a tragedy. It's something that I think when you first see it, you're like, wow, this is happening in the United States. It's usually something you see in a third world country. And so now I think if you break this up into a couple different things, the response has been overwhelming in the sense of the resources. I think I read a quote somewhere where, you know, we've got plenty of resources. We need more luck, good luck. And so that has been good. I think obviously from a political standpoint, what you're seeing is, you know, this is where leaders are supposed to lead. And so, you know, I think over the next week or so, you'll get the sort of the feedback or the evaluation of how Governor DeSantis is doing. But I think one of the things I thought about when this happened was, you know, we had a bridge that collapsed, a walking bridge in, I think it was right near one of the universities down there, maybe FIU, and killed a few people. And this was, they were building the bridge down there. And the reason why I bring that up in relation to this is because, you know, they're related in the sense that you're dealing with highly technical projects that if they fail have high-end safety or, you know, tragic safety consequences. And we rely on engineers, we rely on you know, humans to evaluate what's going on here. And this is something that is really out of the hands of, like, say, you know, the federal government or the state government. This really is right on the ground at when these projects are being dealt with. In the case of the bridge that collapsed, I mean, you've got engineers that got to make decisions. They've got to, you know, they got to follow the regulations that are in place. And, you know, I find it hard to believe that there are not regulations in place that would, you know, keep these things from happening. And so then it bounces back on the people who are responsible for enforcing the regulations. You know, in the case of the collapse of the condominium, you know, there's stories out now that, you know, there was reports warned of major structural damage 3 years before the building collapsed. And, you know, this will be all sorted out on, you know, if there was this type of information. But the bottom line on these things is that tough decisions have to be made. Now, you know, to avoid these issues, this is a condo that was 40 years old. A lot of the infrastructure, as we've seen nationwide, is getting older in the United States. Some of these big transportation projects were built in the 50s and 60s. The condos in South Florida were built in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And so from a timing standpoint, this is where you really got to start making decisions on if there was enough evidence here to say, look, we've got to do something to avoid a crisis. Obviously, now what will happen is this will be a red flag, and you know, a lot of people now will start going over reports that were submitted over the last couple of years denoting concerns in these condominiums in South Florida and all over Florida for that matter. So unfortunate accident, but these things are so rare that it sometimes are tough to stop. And when they do happen, you know, it starts a reassessment of what we're doing. And I think that's what's definitely going to happen here. Now, on the political side, want to touch on this. There's a number of national media that are coming down here and are trying to get in the, start making a name for themselves by reporting about this. And a lot of this information that they're reporting is, you know, is wrong or is misleading. But there are a couple of reports that are clearly designed to try to make Florida and Governor Ron DeSantis fall guys for this tragedy. And wanted to just highlight one. The Florida Capital Star has a story up about the mainstream media, specifically a Washington Post reporter, politicizes Florida condo collapse. And it was like, you know, less than 2 days after the collapse, the reporter, his name is Hannah Dreyer, posted a series of tweets over the weekend pushing a politicized perspective on the Surfside, Florida condo collapse. Dreyer's claims is that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis did not give permission for FEMA to provide on-the-ground aid for a full day. Dreyer's tweets, you know, have since been debunked. And so you say, is this, you know, a Republican-Democrat issue or a, you know, conservative-liberal? Well, look, we've got a Democrat who actually came to DeSantis's defense on this, former head of the Florida Division of Emergency Management and Democrat lawmaker Jared Moskowitz, responded to Dreyer's suggestion as malarkey and went through and explained why. Now, you know, the reason I point this out is not to, you know, argue that this reporter is a bad reporter and all media is bad. The point here is you've got to be careful in what you read. Now, this obviously is being debunked by not just by Republicans and conservative media outlets, but you've got a Democrat coming out here and debunking this. Now, I will say you do have one or two of the alternative media that are, I consider to be left-wing, or I'd say moderate to left-wing. They're also criticizing the national media and how they are trying to politicize this. So I think this gives more credence to the fact that there is a national media narrative with the mainstream media, the legacy media nationally. They try to see everything through this lens of, wait a minute, can we pin this on a Republican? And so that's what this Washington Post reporter did. And now she hasn't deleted her tweets yet. And, you know, there hasn't been any acknowledgement from the Washington Post about this reporting. But within Florida, I think it has been debunked for the most part. Again, it's a shame that something of this magnitude, you know, we see the national media come in and try to politicize it. But again, this is what we've been talking about in terms of the national narrative. Now, really quick, I've run out of time here. I want to touch on one thing in terms of the gambling amendment that is these two large companies, FanDuel and DraftKings, are coming in, started a political committee. And they're looking to get an amendment on the ballot to allow them to make some money through sports betting. Now, they've got to get a lot of signatures, obviously, but the next thing they would have to do is get the language approved by the Supreme Court. Two things there. You know, the Supreme Court can be viewed as a political institution also, so you got the politics of it, because this amendment would really cause a problem with the gambling compact that was signed by the legislature and negotiated by the governor. So, you know, the politics of it could definitely come into play. The second part would be, if they do get the signatures again with the Supreme Court, could be the wording of the language. This is already a very technical topic. And we've already seen a couple of things, a couple of these proposed amendments kicked out because of problems with language. And so, again, the Supreme Court would weigh in on that. And so it will be interesting to see. But as I said earlier, the reason why these two companies are willing to take this risk is because of the amount of money that is involved with gambling. I mean, you're looking at the state of Florida with the movement of legalization of marijuana, possibly, and also now gambling. So the third largest state in the United States, so there's a lot of money here. So anyway, sorry we ran late there. We'll get to some of these other issues on Thursday. I hope you have a good rest of the day, and we'll be back here Thursday at 11 a.m. I'm Steve Stewart. We'll be back right after this break.
Waiting for the break.